Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Let's go there.
With Shira and Ryan.
Oh, entertainment.
Music. Pop culture.
LGBT plus news. Let's go there.
Starts now.
Oh my God. I can't believe we made it to Friday.
I got back to the studio. Just in time, Shira Lazar.
I needed that cupcake.
Yeah.
Low blood sugar right here.
I would never run anywhere else but just to get you a cupcake.
Well, I appreciate
you. That's the love that I have for you because I missed you so much without me being here yesterday.
I know. How were you at jury duty? Describe the experience.
Jury duty feels like if you've ever seen the movie Hunger Games, it feels like that. You're just like waiting around to be pawned off to some case. And honestly, it was so uncomfortable being in the courtroom. Kind of felt like I was filming Law and Order or something. It was very, yeah.
Was that the first time you were ever in a courtroom?
I mean, yeah, I'd stay away from police and courtrooms like the plague, honey. I don't got time for that. But I do think it was so funny.
What?
You hear all these stories about jury duty and, like, you know, people having the wild stories to kind of get excused, or like they'll put on like their accents like super heavy to be like, I don't understand English.
Oh my God.
We were literally, so it was crazy because the group of people that were like I was with, they were kind of discussing amongst themselves, like, okay, so here's what I'm going to do get out. And so when the judge comes out and, like, we're, like, they're assessing if we're going to be on the jury or not, you see people, like, full on, like, kind of turn into these actors. And they're, like, accentuating already the accents that they already have.
What?
But they're making them bigger. And they're, like, literally, like, there was this one woman who was, like, I can't hear you. And, like, everyone was speaking clearly and, like, loudly. And she was, like, well, if you keep mumbling, I can't hear you. And she ended up getting excused.
Right away.
Yeah. Like, it's like, so you have to have like a plan going into these things where you gotta, I guess you have to have like, I don't know, you have to have a major excuse to be like, yeah, they can't use you. I was sitting there scared, hoping they wouldn't pick me.
Well, so what did you do?
I just sat there because they had called people by their names, and luckily my name wasn't called. They had already 12 people there. I don't even know if I'm supposed to be talking about this.
Did you sign some sort of NDA?
I think there's an automatic NDA.
Well, you're not telling us about the trial.
True, but I guess, yeah, I don't know if I can talk about my experience. Can I? Is that all off limits? Who knows?
I mean, you
did
it.
Do I hear police sirens?
You already did it.
I think I hear police sirens in the background. No, but it was
I'm happy you made it
experience.
Through.
Yeah.
You survived.
And I read a really great book, too. It's called Turning Pro.
Oh, you actually read a book?
Yeah, I read a book.
Look at that.
Well, my thing is I was afraid to bring any electronics because I was like, is that going to be disrespectful to the judge? Me, like, having my headphones on and me on my computer?
You play by the rules.
Yeah, and so I just bought a book.
But you did FaceTime us from inside court. So what are you talking about, Ryan?
You weren't supposed to say that. I was calling in to check in on my
team.
Oh,
yes, of course.
To see how y'all were doing.
He was like, get me out of here right now. Like, are you supposed to be doing that right now?
I mean, I don't know if I was, but I was in a place where by that time I was about to find out if I had to come today. And so we knew that it was going to be, oh, if they don't call us in on another thing, then we're good.
Are you supposed to dress up?
So, yes, I didn't realize I was supposed to dress up.
I'm surprised because you play by the rules, and yet you didn't realize this one rule.
Well, I've never done jury duty. It's not like there's a handbook on how to be perfect at jury duty, but my mom was like, yeah, you're supposed to wear a button down and a nice pair of slacks or something. I was like, I don't even know what any of those words mean.
Well, maybe that's what made you get off. Maybe they saw what you were wearing, they're like, no.
Maybe I had a baseball cap.
Yeah, they're like, this guy.
I just wasn't prepared.
I didn't
know. He thinks
he's coming.
But there were some people in hoodies and stuff. So, yeah, I don't know. I know people say it's like, you know, they say it's your civic duty. But honestly, it felt like torture. I did not like doing jury duty.
All right. Well, we appreciate you being back.
Yeah.
Welcome back.
Hopefully next time I don't ever have to do it again. And maybe, hopefully, once you become a You become a citizen. Yeah, you'll have to do it, and then we can start giving you excuses for it.
Okay, yes. Yeah. Well, I was going to say, we were going to ask people what their excuses would be to get out of jury duty, but we don't want to encourage that, so we're going to move on from this subject.
I would.
We are going to be getting into a conversation about the Women's March. It's happening tomorrow nationwide. We actually have one of the people leading it who are going to be joining us on the show later on to talk about inclusivity, because it has been questioned a lot in the past.
I think it's something to be said. You know, I believe it's been happening for 4 years now, the Women's March, and I think it's good to kind of reflect how it's changed over the years, and then also how it's progressing.
All right. Yeah. Well, let's get into some what's trending in the news right now. Top of the hour.
Let's do it.
Lawmakers in South Dakota and Florida want to make it a felony for doctors to give gender transition treatment to minors. The bills introduced in both states would criminalize not only gender affirmation surgeries, which are not usually performed on minors anyway, in line with accepted medical protocols, but also hormone treatment and puberty blockers. Now, the Florida legislation that's identical to South Dakota's was introduced this week, along with several other anti-LGBTQ bills, some of which want to override local anti-discrimination and anti-conversion therapy ordinances.
My thing is, I feel like every couple of months we're always reporting on a story like this.
There's always a fight, right?
And I don't understand, like you just read, people are not performing these surgeries on minors anyway. So I don't really understand what people are afraid of or what this lawmaker is trying to do and say. I mean, who's doing this? And I feel like there is that kind of conspiracy.
Oh, yeah.
That people think they're just changing children like that. That's not true.
Yeah, well, Equality Florida is fighting it, and so there's still going to be a long journey ahead with that one. Now, this is interesting. President Donald Trump will be represented by former Bill Clinton special prosecutors Kenneth Starr and Robert Ray.
I mean, this is wild news.
Yeah, plus retired Harvard constitutional law professor Alan Dershowitz at his Senate impeachment trial.
He literally got all the major criminals.
Yep. He's getting ready.
Lawyers being like, yeah, so if they can do that, then they can help me.
Yeah, and they're going to be working behind White House counsel and Trump's longtime personal attorney. And this is really interesting. Dershowitz, who's a Harvard Law School professor, as I mentioned, he gained fame as a member of O.J. Simpson's defense team.
Yep.
During the trial in the mid-90s. Okay? But some people have expressed concerns because he also has ties to Jeffrey Epstein. Remember the late pedophile businessman?
Which is so weird. Yeah. It's so weird.
Now, Starr, this is like the who's who, okay, became a household name in the late 1990s as the then independent counsel overseeing the investigation that led to Clinton's impeachment. This is all very interesting.
Which is why Monica Lewinsky was like,
yes,
what?
Yes, Monica Lewinsky tweeted, this is definitely an are you effing kidding me kind of day. Okay.
Can you believe, I mean, what does that genuinely really say about Donald Trump and his thinking? I feel like
he's ready to fight.
Well, one, he's ready to fight, but also the people that defended these people weren't great. It's not like they won their cases.
Well, OJ did.
Oh, yeah, true. That's true. OJ did win that case. But
and actually, he fought, though. No, he's saying he fought against. He oversaw the investigation that led to Clinton's impeachment. So I believe Starr was against Clinton. So it worked. Actually, he did the work.
But then going to Jeffrey Epstein, that's a little weird, don't you think?
I mean, it seems like everyone has a degree of separation from Epstein. Not us, obviously.
I mean, I don't know that white man.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to that man.
Anyone who has money, okay? All right, let's move on to a very heartbreaking interview that has been released by CNN involving Andrew Yang's wife.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
oh,
and a lawsuit against her gynecologist. Now, she did this exclusive interview where she revealed a lot about a trauma she went through and how it could help other women out there, the emotional clip, and what happened coming up next.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, the new Channel Q.
Now, everyone is talking about this really powerful interview that came out today. It was a CNN exclusive, Evelyn Yang, Andrew Yang's wife. And I don't feel like we've heard a lot from Evelyn.
No, I mean, obviously they've come out and talked about their son dealing with autism. And she has been very silent on this campaign trail. And I think this was a moment, obviously, it sucks to kind of say this in some way, but this is a moment where I feel like I finally saw who she was and her potential of being this amazing first lady.
Yeah, well, she came out to talk about her own experience with sexual assaults And this is might be triggering for some people, so yeah. I just want to preface this. We will be playing clips from the interview where she definitely describes some of the things she went through and how it impacted her personally. Yes. Yeah. So we just want to give you a heads up on that. She talked about an experience she had with her own gynecologist in 2012 when she was 7 months pregnant. This man, his name is Robert Haddon, and he actually was involved in the assault of many other women after that and was part of this whole case that came out,
yeah.
which she, you know, later discovered and was also prosecuted by the Manhattan DA's office.
Right.
Now, this also gets very complicated. We'll get into that in a bit. But let's play some of the clips and get into the story.
Yeah, yeah. Here's the first one.
Was indisputable, quite blatant.
Yang says the worst assault happened when she was 7 months pregnant.
I was in the exam room, and I was dressed and ready to go. And then at the last minute, he kind of made up an excuse. He said something about, I think you might need a C-section. And he proceeded to grab me over to him and undress me and examine me internally, ungloved. And at first, I was a little bit like, what's going on here?
And there was no one else in the room?
No. In fact, when I think back to most of our exams, I don't think there was somebody in the room. Yeah.
You thought to yourself, this isn't just inappropriate banter. This is much different.
So that's a clip of her describing the abuse. We're not going to continue the clip because you get the point.
Yeah.
But she talks about the reason why she came out now to share these stories is because besides the fact that, you know, they did put themselves out there in sharing the story of their son with autism, and she saw the impact that had
right.
on people. But she said that they were reading letters that voters had sent to her husband. And one of the letters that she had read suddenly stopped her in her tracks. A woman had written that she had decided to press sexual assault charges against an investor in her company because she had heard Yang talk on the campaign trail about how female entrepreneurs don't get enough support. And Evelyn tells CNN in this interview that was enough for her to, for, you know, me to make this life-altering move, and that was just so powerful, or her, this woman. I remember reading that letter and others and saying, I feel you. I wish I could reach out to you and tell you I understand. I have my own story. And so that really encouraged her
yeah.
to talk about this and be open about it. But it
I hate, because this is a very serious question
yeah.
And just a serious topic as well. And obviously, this is our, like we said, this is our first moment hearing from her.
Mm-hmm.
And I do kind of have this devil advocate question that I do feel like people are hearing and that they are even thinking of themselves. And maybe in this case of, like, since this is the first moment, do you feel like this is, one, obviously, you know, her going public, do you feel like this was to kind of help Yang in any way? Or do you genuinely feel, I mean, after watching it, she was so emotional and so in it. And obviously, as a victim, I think she wants to put her story out
oh, yeah.
there. But do you think this is a moment where there's any calculations behind this?
It felt interesting in terms of timing, considering
yeah.
he didn't make it to the debate stage.
Yeah.
But he's still in the race.
Of course. And
so,
he's still, people are thinking he has a good shot, a credible
yeah.
shot.
So I would assume as a partner, maybe, I mean, I don't think I can't imagine him going, now's the time to share your story.
Right.
I feel like she felt it was time. If we're going to, we need to put ourselves out there.
Yeah.
This is our truth, and our truth will end up supporting us to get to that next level.
And I know there's conversations on social media about this, especially when, you know, Andrew Yang is trying to, you know, kind of solidify himself in this race. And I think, in my opinion, when I saw this video, it did, like I said earlier, it did show me a piece of her
yeah.
and it showed me, like, wow, I genuinely see her being a great first lady, even after hearing the story about when he found out.
Yeah, and let's get to that clip right now. She talks about the moment that she shared the experience with her husband.
Right. It wasn't something that I did. It was, you know, this was a serial predator. And he just picked me as his prey.
It was at that point she told husband Andrew.
I just needed to tell someone. You know, I needed to share it in that moment because it felt so big to me. I needed that support. And I told him. And he cried. I mean, he wasn't bawling, but there were tears. Mm-hmm. And he said it's because he remembered when I came home one day ranting about pervy doctors. I said something like, why do they let men be gynecologists? It makes no sense. And he remembered that I had made this comment, and he felt so bad. He felt guilty that he didn't make the connection or ask me more.
She found a lawyer.
All right, so that's her sharing her story. By the way, it continues because this ended up being a bigger case. And actually, the DA who was involved in the case that ended up charging this guy, even though he was let go. Yeah. He was working at Columbia University. The whole thing is crazy.
But I do think the question she brought up,
yeah,
though.
The DA, by the way, is connected to Epstein.
Shut up.
So he's very lenient with these types of cases. So that's a whole other thing.
Yeah.
We should get into like a Let's Go There about this next week.
Yeah.
Why these cases continue to happen and these men keep on getting let go. But
I think she did bring up an interesting question, though, of saying, should men, are cis, you know, men be gynos? And I
that's
do
a whole other conversation.
Yeah. I'm like, when I was watching this interview, I was like, yeah, I see her side, and I don't even think that should be a thing anymore. Like, no.
I mean, I don't think we can't make an assumption that every man who is cis man is going to do this.
But you can't blame women for feeling
uncomfortable.
Of course.
That is true. And that's why you get to choose.
Yeah.
Right?
I agree.
You can choose what you want. In the end, and you talked about her motivation to do this now, she said, I need to use that voice. I feel like it's something that's an obligation, but also a privilege and a gift that I get to share my story now and also help other women. And she definitely did that by sharing the story. And I wouldn't be surprised if it also helps them in the race, but that hopefully wasn't the point of sharing it. Okay, let's move into some lighter news, some what's the tea, what's coming up.
All right, we got a couple birthdays to celebrate coming up. And then also Carly Claus. You remember when I told you there was a shady moment on Project Runway where a contestant came for her in-laws? Well, she's finally speaking out about that on Watch What Happens Live, and we're playing the clip coming right up next.
Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan, the new Channel Q.
All right, we are back with What's the Tea, our entertainment pop culture stories of the day. And first things first, I got to give a big happy birthday to my first lady, my forever first lady, Michelle the Obama. The cutest, sweetest message from her husband, Barack Obama, today, like, I feel like touched everyone's hearts.
Goals.
I mean, it was the most beautiful thing.
Yeah.
It was a photo booth photo of them just being all cute and intimate and kissing and stuff. And he said, in every scene, you are my star, Michelle Obama. Happy birthday, baby. Are you kidding me?
So cute.
I'll never find love.
He seems like he's the crazier one of the two. Like the fun.
Okay,
crazy.
We're not talking about their sex life, Shira
No,
Lazar.
Not like that, but like fun. They party. Like he looks a bit drunk in one of the photos.
I mean, probably, clearly. He did used to smoke weed, and I think he also, did some other stuff, too, back in
the psychedelics.
Yeah. It's also Betty White's birthday, who turned a big 98 today.
Oh, my God.
Like, I know she's tired and just ready to be like, woo, Jesus. But I am so happy. She's an incredible artist, and I want to play a fun little clip of, Sandra Bullock and Ryan Reynolds. You know, they all starred in that movie together, The Proposal, and they did a funny little Instagram video wishing her a happy birthday, and I want to play a little bit of it.
Happy birthday to you.
Happy birthday to you.
Happy birthday,
dear Betty.
From Sandy, who loves you more than Ryan.
From Ryan, who loves you so much more than Sandy.
Happy birthday.
What does Sandy do for you every year? I mean, does she like show up and hand deliver flowers for you and wearing nothing but black socks and a dozen gold bracelets, just like you requested?
You
doubt it.
I love you. Happy birthday.
Cute. I'm obsessed with those two, and also just doing it in a very Reynolds type of way is like hilarious. But let's move in. Mm. Let's move on to like the real conversation that I feel like we should have. So there's an update to the Carly Claus story where she was on Project Runway, and one of the contestants kind of bought up her in-laws being the Kushners.
Yep.
And it was a very shady moment that went viral. And we never really knew how she felt besides the clip. And she actually talks about, like, what her political status is. And I felt like we should listen to it. Here we go.
Andy.
Yes?
I'm sure I'm not the only person in this country who does not necessarily agree with their family on politics.
Uh-huh.
That's a good answer.
Yeah,
that is a good answer. I voted as a Democrat in 2016, and I plan to do the same in 2020.
Oh.
So she did a hardcore, like, I am not playing with Trump's, you know, mess. I'm not a part of that. Yeah. That is his brother. We're hardcore Democrats. And she also had a moment where she said this about the dress that was in question of this entire thing. She said, honestly, the real tragedy of this whole thing is no one is talking about how terrible that dress is. Oh. This is why he went home. I love it. I gotta stand for her in some way. She's hilarious.
Yeah, she's a bit more sassy than Heidi.
Yeah, I mean,
Heidi's pretty sassy, but I feel like it's gotten.
I was like, who's Heidi? Her sister?
Heidi,
Heidi Klum.
Yeah, the original former host.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, we got more coming up in What's the Tea. Actually, the real reason why Oprah dropped out of a documentary exposing Russell Simmons' sexual abuse claims. If you didn't know, we're spilling all the tea all about this. It's a crazy story, so buckle up.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, the new Channel Q.
All right, we're back with What's the Tea, our entertainment pop culture stories of the day. Yep. And let's get into this Oprah story that seems to be kind of everywhere. I had no clue, one, that she was executive producing a film, a documentary for the Sundance Film Festival. It's all about, you know, the alleged sexual assault claims against hip-hop mogul Russell Simmons. One, the film is, I guess, now titled On the Record. It was set to be distributed by Apple TV. Uh-huh. And, of course, you know, Oprah has a huge collaboration with Apple. And she shared basically this statement last Friday saying that she killed Apple's commitment to, you know, stream the documentary. She even said that she split from the project altogether. And, you know, she basically gave this kind of light little statement saying, oh, you know, I just don't, you know, I just don't want to be a part of it anymore, like blah, blah, blah. Hmm. But actually, there was more to the story.
Okay.
Yeah. And so it seems that Russell Simmons had been pressuring her to kind of split from this whole thing. She told New York Times that he did reach out to me multiple times and attempted to pressure me. She even added, I told him directly in a phone call that I will not be pressured either into or out of backing this film. I'm only going to do what I believe to be is the right thing. Now, here's the thing. Mm-hmm. You know, Oprah, you know, is obviously, she became a target not only of, you know, Simmons, but his associates kind of looking to debunk all of the victims in the documentary's claims and trying to intimidate Oprah into dumping the entire project. Now, one of the victims, her name is Dixon. Drew Dixon is her name, actually told the Times, New York Times, I feel like I'm experiencing a second crime. I am being silenced. The broader community is being intimidated. The most powerful black woman in the world is being intimidated.
Wow.
Which is actually quite crazy because there's even a more of a twist. So the Times story actually reported that Oprah already had doubts over the entire presentation of the various, you know, claims against Simmons. She didn't feel like it was being told in a right way. She thought the storytelling of it was a little like, I don't necessarily agree with that.
That's fair to say that, you know, it's a story that needs to be told, but the execution needs to be right, or else there's a lot of... It'll be poked. A lot of holes will be poked.
Yeah, she said this to the filmmaker. She said, I think it's doing a disservice to the women and this film to have their gut-wrenching disclosures reduced to a montage of just sound bites and not giving them the stature of elevating their stories. Mm. She also actually sent the film over to her friend and, you know, actually critically acclaimed director Ava DuVernay. And this is what Ava said. She said she got Simmons on one side pressuring her and then she's got a film on the other side that she doesn't agree with. So if she walks away from the film, she seems like she's caving in to Simmons. And if she stays with the film, then she's putting her name on something that she feels doesn't quite hit the mark.
How can Oprah not figure out how to fix a movie? like a documentary. You would think she has a fix-it people that are some of the best, biggest people out there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, and why doesn't she just say, we're going to delay the screening or the premiere. We're still going to do this movie. I just don't think it's ready yet, right? Like, right. Why would she pull out completely if knowing all the things at stake here?
Well, I guess the Los Angeles Times also investigated Oprah's exit from the film in a report published on Thursday. In that story, the filmmakers claimed that Oprah's damning statement against the film, which she said she didn't believe to be complete, conflicts with their own experiences with her in the lead up to last week's news. So the director, the creators of this are saying that they also felt that Oprah's sudden announcement, So I guess these are some of the victims that are saying this. Oprah's sudden announcement prevented them from properly contacting and preparing Simmons' alleged victims. One of the creators of this documentary said, I felt horrible that we didn't have more events time to set them up and warn them. That's a shockwave. It was horrible. It's been horrible. So now that the film is now kind of, you know, I guess UTA now represents the film. And so they're trying to find another distributor at Sundance that wants to deal with it. But completely Apple and Oprah are done and not connected. It seems like Oprah's disconnect to this film has now kind of stopped these stories to be told, and it kind of sucks.
This could have been handled better.
It could have.
I feel like this is a S show. Like,
I agree.
And it's irresponsible of Oprah, considering how it's not just topical sensitive this information is, and how it's involving people's livelihoods, and including women. You know, Oprah is a woman's woman, right?
I agree,
and
right?
For this to come out and for her not to stand behind this film and women, even if it's not ready, she could have just said, listen, we're not going to put it out right now. Yeah. We're going to push it.
You could have pushed it. I mean, yes, it's a timely story, but also this happened two years ago when the Me Too movement was really coming out, and I remember those claims against Russell Simmons, and if she doesn't agree with it, then maybe she tries to direct it into a different narrative. It's like they would listen to you. She's acting like they're not going to listen to her notes.
Well, we don't know what's happening behind the scenes, but these things happen where a documentary, the first, revisions will happen.
Right.
And new directors will come in to save
it. It's true. Actually, oh my God, producers. I'm so sad. If you are watching Watchmen on HBO, there won't be a season two. The director of that show, and actually helped kind of tell the story, telling him the creator of that show, he decided that he wasn't going to come back, and so HBO just scrapped it.
Why?
Which just sucks, because he just was finished with the story, and HBO doesn't think that bringing on anyone else is going to kind of, you know, do the service. It's going to kind of be a disservice to that show, and I'm so sad about it.
Yeah,
it
you got to let it go. Detachment.
No, I don't like
that. I mean,
that's
what's hard. People get so attached to their favorite shows, they can't take it them ending, including when they just started.
Yeah, I guess. Well, if you want to know more about this story and other entertainment pop culture stories that we are always spilling, head over to WeAreChannelQ.com and make sure to keep us favorited on that radio.com app.
All right, coming up, we've got one of the heads of the Women's March joining us, the nationwide event happening tomorrow, what to expect, and if they finally resolve those inclusivity issues. That's coming up next after what's trending in the news, top of the hour.
Let's go there. We'll be right back.
The new Channel Q.
We're actually
okay,
back.
We are back. And let's get into some what's trending in the news right now. Top of the hour. A safer sex campaign in Utah has been put on hold because the governor doesn't like the sexual innuendo on the packaging. How dare they? Utah Department of Health launched its High is for Human HIV campaign recently. High, like H-I, like high, not getting high. The campaign includes distributing condoms in packets that make humorous references to Utah State and its landmarks. It's actually pretty smart and witty. One says, this is the place, explore Utah's caves, enjoy your mountain, toss the jello salad, don't go bare.
Wait, I don't get the enjoy your mountain.
Like a mountains, because Utah has mountains. So mountain, like mount, if you're mountain someone. Okay.
Ew, oh my God, that's a little graphic.
But it's really just to destigmatize HIV in Utah and get everyone talking about sexual health. That's from Aaron Fratto.
Do we actually think that works? So like who enjoys like witty things on their condoms?
I mean, I've taken condoms before that are cute, like that have cute little things on them.
No, I mean, here's the thing. As a person that loves to take free condoms from the health clinic, I... I don't look at the packaging. I just need the condom to work functionally. And
yeah, that too.
I don't care about the witty things, and I don't really know how much that really does to get everyone talking about sexual health.
Well, we're talking about this campaign right now, so it obviously did its job.
Well, our producer saw it, and she loved it, and so she, of course, we love it as well.
Also, the reason why this is going viral is because the governor, Gary Herbert, did not appreciate this approach. He wrote this statement saying, his office wrote a statement saying, the governor understands the importance of the Utah Department of Health conducting a campaign to educate Utahns about HIV prevention. He does not, however, approve the use of sexual innuendo as part of a taxpayer-funded campaign. They just want boring condoms.
Like, toss the Jell-O salad? Now, come on. You have gotten a
little
too far.
It's cute.
I don't know. I don't really. I think I.
It's a bit. It's a bit extra.
I think I agree with the governor on this. I don't really like it.
But that's just. There's a difference between this is a crappy campaign and this has like weird sexual innuendo. Like that's inappropriate.
I think it is all. I think it's all of those things. I think it's a crappy campaign, and I also think it has weird sexual innuendo.
They said we regret the lewd nature of the branding.
Yeah,
the campaign is now going to be redesigned, and it's understood that 130,000 condoms had been ordered as part of the campaign, and 42,000 had already been distributed. So if you have one of those condoms, you might want to keep it. It's like historic.
I mean, yeah, maybe you can sell it for $2.
Now, let's move on to some news coming out of Chicago. Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot received a standing ovation at Wednesday City Council meeting after objecting to the homophobic tone of a debate on setting aside a portion of city contracts for LGBTQ-owned businesses. The city already allocates a portion of contracts for minority and women-owned businesses. Now, Lightfoot wants to do the same with LGBTQ-owned companies, and the city council did approve it by a vote of 47-1. So obviously people were into it. But this is what happened leading up to the vote. An older man, this is someone on the council, voiced concern that setting aside this type of thing would result in fraud as there is no way to verify someone's sexual orientation.
Oh,
so you can see how this could
have
led
point.
To some stuff.
Yeah, I guess unless you're just like, okay, we're going to take you to a dark room and we're going to see.
Well, you would trust. It's
you.
A trust. Or like if they've, I don't know.
Or maybe there's verifiable. That's weird. Yeah, that's very weird. Yeah.
And someone who happened to be black thought that this would primarily benefit white men. Lightfoot pointed out that not all LGBTQ people are white and that benefiting one group of people doesn't mean harming another. Kind of goes back to a bit of a scarcity attitude. Like if we put aside this for one group, like what about this group?
Yeah, that is true. I do think, you know, Lightfoot obviously means well by doing
this.
Oh,
yeah.
But I do think I think that's actually a good point to make, to say you can't really verify someone's sexual orientation. But I'm still confused on how, I guess, it would be more beneficial for white men. I don't understand that.
Maybe we should reach out to Lightfoot.
Yeah, get a mayor. Yeah, I feel like that can happen.
Well, this is what she had to say. My friends, the pie is big enough to slice it in lots of other ways. I like this. We need not victimize, demonize, and discriminate through our words against anyone else because we are worried about what the size of the pie is going to be for me. It's powerful stuff. And so the resolution was approved, and it moved forward.
I think I understand how it would benefit white men, because in Chicago, a lot of people of color are already super, super marginalized when it comes to they can't afford economically and all these super things.
Yeah.
And so if you're thinking about it, the LGBTQ people that possibly can afford things are going to be the ones that benefit from a system that is already, you know, benefiting them.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I do see why they feel that way.
So then they got to look out for who they're giving that money to, even in the LGBTQ community. Okay, now the European Parliament is calling for common chargers. This is actually good news.
Shira really likes this story.
I do. I was nerding out on this. They're going to be introduced. They're trying to get it introduced, and it would fit all mobile phones and tablets. So you know how annoying it is when you're looking for a charger, but you know there's a bunch of people that have Androids and you have the iPhone, right?
I don't really hang out with that many people that have Androids.
Yeah. Or you have an Android and everyone has an iPhone and you can't use the same chargers. Well, they're trying to push for a common charger. So you can use one charger for every type of phone.
So this is equality among the chargers. Yeah. No one will feel left
All
out.
Chargers matter.
All chargers matter. That's
but
funny.
Last gen, yeah, of course, Apple is obviously not happy about this. Last January, Apple argued that such a law would stifle innovation harm the environment and cause unnecessary disruption for its users, or make things much easier for everyone. Apple, let us go.
You know, Apple loves to be exclusive. They love to have the hierarchy. They're like, uh-uh. There is a, people buy our phones because they're of a different status.
We're gonna,
I feel like they play into that.
We're going to continue making people pay for extra accessories at every point in their lives. Now, coming up, why the first female head of the Grammys got placed on leave just 10 days before the show. Would this have happened to a man? We're going there next.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, the new Channel Q.
Now, I can't believe that the Grammy Awards are coming up in just 10 days, the 62nd annual Grammy Awards. And there was a surprising development that happened that a lot of people are talking about, and that brings up a broader issue. So let's get into it.
That's
it. According to Academy President and Chief Executive Deborah Dugan has been placed on leave 10 days before the show after an allegation of misconduct. And the organization confirmed that yesterday. She had taken over on August 1st, and this was why it was a big deal. She was the first female president of the Recording Academy, which oversees the Grammy Awards.
And this is the guy that she replaced was the one that was all over the news a couple, was it last year or maybe the year before?
Yeah, in 2018, the chief executive, Neil Portnow, who had been around forever, and he's a legend, he had suggested that female artists should, quote-unquote, step up if they wanted to be recognized at the Grammys.
Which, yikes.
Yeah, that faced a lot of controversy. People were not happy about it. And because of that, he had to step down. So she was already filling, you know, big shoes. And like while that one statement was wrong and problematic, he had had, you know, had been around for a long time. People loved him.
I mean, yeah, but he also did have along a lot of female artists like Ariana Grande and Nicki Minaj. There were a lot of things that were stirring in pop culture where they were like, we do not want to even attend or even perform because either someone on your team or people, they just weren't treating them right. And it seemed like it was a case where it was women that were speaking up about this female artist. And now the fact that he said that about other women, that was a bad look. And then now to know that this, their first, you know, female president is now kind of stepping, or not stepping down, but she's like on...
She's basically being thrown out because
she's put on a leave.
Supposedly, according to insiders, she had already been stirring the pot. It wasn't maybe the right fit from the beginning. And it is hard going into a legacy organization like that where it is old school. You're having members that have been around for a long time. They have a bit of an older mentality, which that older mentality is even being called out by artists like Halsey, who aren't nominated necessarily or whose work isn't recognized because they're not recognized by the quote-unquote Academy.
I mean, it's the same thing that you see with Taylor Swift and this whole Scooter Braun thing. I think, you know, women are now, you know, and especially in music, they're going to be respected. And I also even think this is, and for a bigger picture, I think about how the first woman, you know, if, you know, Elizabeth Warren or you know, Amy Klobuchar, which is probably never what happened, but if Elizabeth Warren steps her foot into the White House and she wins this election, there's going to be such a heavy load on her because, you know what, she's going to have to fix everything that Donald Trump, you know, did. And I think if she doesn't do that, then everyone's automatically going to blame her for not being this, you know, super kind of messiah or changing everything. And it's going to put a dent in her being the first female president. It's that kind of double standard, that load that a lot of females go through, women go through when they are put into these higher up positions. And it just feels like, yeah, they can't make the same mistakes as a man does.
Yeah. And obviously some of these are umbrella statements, but There is something to be said. These are conversations that need to be had because
how
if you
that
have somewhere,
statement if that's well, because saying part that,
because sometimes I don't think that some people think that just because a woman is upfront or assertive, it doesn't. Sometimes they can be assumed. It can be assumed they're being a
B word. A B word. Yes.
And sometimes. Some people might say, no, I'm not going to assume that. I actually think that's awesome and I respect a woman. So you could say they are blanket statements, even though we see them happen more. It's more likely than those things will happen than not.
We were talking about this over the break, where if she's coming into a position where even this in this article from the LA Times, it talks about, you know, the coworkers, the people that were working for her, under her, were feeling like she had this kind of bully tone. But my thing is, they also talked on the other hand about them not wanting to change a lot of the systems that they were
doing.
That's
the problem.
And so she's coming into a place where it's already difficult for her. She's already having to kind of, you know, change, try to change the culture and change people's minds. And so, of course, she's going to have to put down, you know, her foot and be like, no, I am running this now. You need to listen to
me. Yeah, and I think that whether you're a woman or anyone else going into these types of organizations, it is like moving a ship that has been stuck in one spot for a long time.
Yeah.
And that's why, you know, a lot of people don't like corporate culture.
Yeah.
Because they'll come in and they're hired to innovate and change things up, but they can't even do their jobs. And it's not the first time we've seen something like this, but in this case, it's a very high-profile job.
Yeah.
She did file a complaint with the Human Resources Department, and this is what is kind of interesting, because she's saying that this might come out, and I'm interested to see if this is, you know, what the truth is. She said that she had outlined practices that raised concerns for her, including voting irregularities, financial mismanement, exorbitant and unnecessary legal fees, and conflicts of interest involving members of the Academy's board, executive committee, and outside lawyers.
So it seems like she was going to uncover a lot of mess.
And
that
that's
was
the
there.
Thing. So who knows if they kicked her out because of that, or because, she ruffled a lot of feathers, people didn't like it, and they wanted her out. Meanwhile, she got replaced by another guy.
I don't know. I feel like we can't continue to have these conversations about and telling women to stand up for themselves and do the, you know, and try to change this culture with Me Too and all these things and this women empowerment. I mean, the Women's March is literally happening on Saturday, and it just feels like the culture has not changed. Nothing has happened. People want to have these conversations, but nothing's really going anywhere.
In order for a change to happen, we need to be open to having these conversations.
I agree.
And we need to be realistic and hear what's happening. And be okay with these umbrella statements and say, like, not say, like, well, I don't think that, so that means it doesn't exist.
I just have a problem with the term umbrella statement when it's actually kind of impacting the culture and everyone is seeing it. Like, these are conversations that are happening because it's a repetitive thing. And I don't think that necessarily falls into the umbrella category as we're kind of putting it in some way.
I would agree with that. Yeah. I think that I guess I was representing a bit of, like, someone might say that it doesn't always happen. I mean, someone could say I'm a woman and I've had a grand old time.
You've had men try you as well.
Oh yeah, I'm tried all the time. Mm-hmm. And guess what? I do talk to other women out there, so we could say it's common. But there's still those anomaly situations. The problem is, time and time again, I will have conversations with women. And this is the conversations that is being had even after so much change is supposedly happening.
But that's a good segue. Like I said, the Women's March is happening on Saturday. And,
yes.
You know, it's 4 years into this thing. And we do want to know if the culture has this all impacted anything.
Yeah, we're looking at the evolution of the Women's March 4 years later.
Yeah.
Can you believe it? Chief Strategy Officer Caitlin Breedlove joins us for that conversation next.
Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan, the new Channel Q.
I can't believe it's already 4 years since the first Women's March.
I mean, seriously, this is just a conversation culturally that we're having, and it's unfortunate that, you know, it just took like 4 years ago for, you know, us to be talking about women's issues.
Well, yeah, the first Women's March had around 4 million people. In 2018, it was closer to 2 million. It has decreased over the years as it's continued.
Yeah.
And I really want to know why, because obviously we talk about all this stuff. We just had a story and conversation about even a Grammys executive stepping down who's a woman and what she's going through, which brought up a whole bigger conversation about equality, women in the workplace. And we have a conversation about, are we ready for a female president even?
Yeah.
The Me Too movement conversations continue. But yet, why are we not still interested in showing up like we did from the start? So joining us right now is Chief Strategy Officer Caitlin Breedlove from the Women's March. Welcome to the show. Thank you so much for being here.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
Now, the big day is tomorrow. I'm sure you're very busy getting ready.
We are.
Tell us how this year is going to be different. As you probably heard, we know that the numbers have decreased. So how are you trying to get people excited about the mission still?
So, sure. I mean, you know, the thing about the first Women's March is it's pretty hard to beat in terms
of
numbers,
course.
Mostly because it really centers on the actual marchers.
Right.
So this year we're working hard to bring it back to the marchers themselves. And as you might know, like, you know, there's the thing that's incredible about the Women's March is, you know, we tend to have massive turnout both in D.C., but also sister marches around the country. So we have 250 sister marches lined up. I come from a red state. I live in Arizona. I organized for many years in red states. So it's very close to my heart that we have such diverse representation and, you know, queer and trans folks and straight folks, women, moms, grandmas, aunties, like they turn out for the Women's March. And we think that's really important because it's going to take activism from all of us, not just paid activists.
Yeah.
To be able to do what we need to do.
And
you know?
That's so interesting that you brought up, you know, you're from a red state and how important that is for you to make sure everyone feels, you know, comfortable there. Because we have in conversations, even last year, we've talked to, you know, a woman that is, she thinks of herself as a conservative and she's felt like, oh, I don't really have a place there. And oftentimes, you know, we're talking about such heavy issues, especially when it comes to this Women's March. There, it can be difficult to have everyone there kind of agreeing or even feeling like supported in some way.
Yeah, you know, I mean, a lot of, you know, I've been an activist a long time, but what I find when I spend time on the coast is that a lot of times I'm in a conversation that I wouldn't be able to have at home in Phoenix or where I've lived in North Carolina or Tennessee or Georgia. You know, I'm a queer woman in a red state that's affected by climate change, that's a border state with a toddler who's, you know, a mixed race child with two mommies. Like, there's a pretty specific conversation that we're having, and it doesn't always look like what we're having in New York, right? And I think that, like, the thing that's so important to us is actually how do we not say, preach, preach, talk, talk, the Women's March is about three or four or five people, but rather say, like, this is about all of our leadership. This is about what's important to the marchers. What are the most core issues? How do we step up on those, help people both raise their consciousness, but also connect to opportunities to engage? Because women and trans and gender nonconforming people, but those of us in the communities, we're going to determine what happens with Trumpism in 2020. Both at the ballot box, but also culturally.
Well, we want to talk more about those issues and also the theme of this year's march as we continue this conversation. We have Caitlin Breedlove with us, the Chief Strategy Officer of the Women's March. We'll be right back.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, the new Channel Q.
Okay, we are back. We've been talking about the Women's March, which is going into its fourth year. And actually, back with us, we have someone actually from the event itself. We know they're very busy. The Chief Strategy Officer, Caitlin Breedlove, is back with us. Thanks for being here.
Happy to be here.
Okay, so we were talking about the issues that you are looking to focus on. And I know that these have always been issues that have been a part of it, but have they changed this year?
Yeah, so, I mean, one of the things that's really important to us this year is to feel like we're really returning the march to the marchers. And we surveyed the base, like, three times this year, and folks said, like, climate justice, reproductive rights, health and justice, and immigrant justice are really priorities to who we work with. So we did teach-ins on all those subjects. All of them were sold out, closed events, and we also live-streamed to a lot of our base. And we're really also focusing on how do we do community education, but also action and mobilization on the issues that are important to us. You know, people have different choices for who they want to endorse for president. There are different people inside the Women's March community that are picking different issues. But we really want to support the idea that women and trans and gender nonconforming people are who are going to make the difference in 2020. So we want it to be an incredibly welcoming and embracing event tomorrow. There are 252 sister marches happening, and it's everybody from grandmas on, you know, dog sleds in Juneau, Alaska, to Phoenix, Arizona, where I live, where I, you know, when I march there, even though I'm marching this year in D.C., I see, you know, queer activists on the left, and I see Chicano, you know, Republican women that I know. And everybody's bringing their auntie, they're bringing their kid, they're bringing their partner, their lover, their grandma, and people are turning out. And that's the kind of civic engagement it's really going to take. You know, and queer and trans communities have been a huge part of that. And we're very, very proud that we are really much more central in the leadership of Women's March than we've ever been. We have the first trans Latina co-president of the Women's March, Isa Noyola, who's worked on issues around ICE and detention and trans Latina women for years. You know, we have a huge diversity on our staff and board. And I think that, like, we have really made the difference also in bringing just that special queer spirit to things in a particular way this year. And I'm very proud. As a queer person, I'm very proud to be part of it.
Is that what you've seen kind of the Women's March evolve over all these years? Because obviously it's just going to grow bigger and bigger, and there's more things that you want to make sure you're hitting. And especially, I feel like this last couple of years, women's reproductive health, like, issues have been at the top of the bar where you're seeing, you know, rights being stripped away left and right, or trying to be stripped away left and right. It just feels like you're on the pulse of that right now.
Absolutely. And, you know, I mean, there's multiple parts of that, right? We know that Black maternal health rates and rates for women of color are terrible. We know trans health care is absolutely terrible for trans and gender nonconforming people in this country. And we know that so much of that has to do with patriarchy and gender oppression, to be honest, right?
Yeah,
because we're impacted by that, because our bodies are not important. Our lives are not important. Our children are not important. I mean, I live in a state where I'm registered as my son's, you know, father, and I identify as a woman.
Wow.
Because the Republicans and Democrats can't agree on what second parent adoption looks like. Now, if I identified as trans, that would be fine, or gender nonconforming. Mm. But as part of a lesbian couple, it's pretty preposterous, right?
Yeah.
And so that connects us all in so many ways. These issues are so deeply connected, and it is, should be nobody's choice but ours. What we do with our bodies, our lives, our sexuality, our babies, that's all our business. And most of the country's with us. And an engine like Women's March helps mobilize that, because 70% of our folks are brand new activists, which is really different from other organizations, you know, and they don't know. And so we try to inform them, mobilize them, lead them to action in positive ways.
I mean, listen, hear, hear.
She's over here preaching today.
Yeah, I mean, we agree. And that's why I think that it's interesting, because I wonder how you can cater to all women where it's obvious where some perspectives are, which are the ones that get to be heard, we that do believe in choice, when there are a bunch of people that don't, that are women that want to be involved. How do you cater to all women?
How do you bridge the gap?
And I believe it's possible. At the same time, there's very clear lines in the sand here.
You know, I mean, I think a big part of it has to do with, like, if you look at LGBTQ communities, I mean, we didn't convince everybody that we should be humans and we should have rights. We convinced a significant percent of everyone in every county, in every state, red or blue, right? Because they realize, yo, y'all are our kids, y'all are our teachers, you are, right, you're in community with us. And as we utilize a coming out strategy, we were able to win over, right? Feminism is very different, but in a lot of ways there are similarities. Like, we are seeing that as we come to identify as, like, we are the people that take responsibility for the community work, whether it's boring or whether it's exciting, then we actually see that part of our work in this election is to help people, because not everybody who identifies as a woman is a mother or an auntie or a grandmother. But we do know, the data shows, that when we hone in on the kind of responsibility that women end up having for other people, we end up in a situation where people feel neutralized around their more conservative positions, because they do want climate justice for their children. Right? They do actually want to live in a safe place with good jobs where their children will have opportunities, right? And they are actually concerned about those who come after us. And so that's one of the faith and LGBTQ issues and the economy and climate and healthcare are some of the places that we see the fault lines really show up with some of the more centrist or conservative voters, right?
Yeah.
Because they know that there are certain things that pull on them that are deeper. They're just deeper than some political, you know, affiliation, or frankly, you know, with some straight cisgender women, you know, how their husband or their boyfriend or their dad votes. They're actually willing to dissent when it is something that so deeply affects them. So what we look for and listen for is, what are those things that will move them? And, well, and that's where we move into.
Well, Caitlin Breedlove, thank you so much for your passion and your work, and excited to see the results tomorrow, and just everyone coming together for a great cause.
And I can't
we
wait
really
to have you back
it.
On 4 year, 5 years later to talk about even the bigger and better evolution and where we're going to be standing.
Thanks so much for having me on. We really appreciate it.
Well, have fun and be safe out there. Please enjoy. Can't wait to see all the viral pictures and videos come out tomorrow. Again, Caitlin Breedlove is the Chief Strategy Officer of the Women's March. For more info, to get involved tomorrow, womensmarch.com. We'll be back with more right after this.
Let's go there. We'll be right back. The new channel.
Oh, guess what? We're back.
We are back. It's not my fault.
No, nothing is your fault.
I will not take responsibility.
Don't do it.
For things going wrong. Not on my watch.
Just blame it on me.
I'm blaming everything on you. Like, stolen charger on you. But it's okay. Continue.
A stolen charger?
Yeah,
really, we're going there?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
What's the show called, Shira?
You know. What's trending in the news right now, top of the hour? This is a love story coming up. Are you ready? Two prison inmates just made history for being the second same-sex couple ever to tie the knot inside a correctional. I haven't said that word in a long time. Correctional facility of a European Union member country. 34-year-old Kevork Tontian and 30-year-old Wemsin Gabriel da Costa were wed inside Cyprus prison complex in Nicosia, Cyprus last week.
How come, like, you said that sentence pretty perfectly.
I know,
I'm actually really impressed. English.
I know, I said that better than I can speak English.
Yeah, I'm like really shocked and confused.
Something took over me. Yeah. I don't know. The newlyweds, who are both rejected by their families for being gay, met during a prison bingo tournament. This is like some Orange is the New Black stuff. Their relationship grew when they were granted special leave to attend the Pride Parade in Cyprus. Eventually, they finished each other's sentences. He was so in love with da Costa that he intentionally broke the law again.
Wait, that was saying.
Oh, finish his sentence. Sorry. So it said that he finished his sentence. I thought it was because it's a love story that they're finishing his sentences. It's because they're in prison. He's in prison, so one of them finished the sentence, his prison sentence. But he was so in love with this other guy that
he literally went back to jail for him.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Oh my God.
So they could finish each other's sentences.
That is ridiculous.
Yeah, so they could continue living together. And now the prison guards have been so supportive of the relationship from the beginning. They've been allowed to work together, the couple, and share a cell. And inmates who harass them have been transferred to other wings. Now, this is really crazy and rare.
You see them standing up for them. That's beautiful. I mean, it's a little crazy as well that he would go back to prison for this person. But love will make you do crazy things.
Is this Cyprus in the Middle East? Oh, no, it's a part of Greece.
I love that you're just finding out about the story as everyone else's.
No, I mean, I'm just trying to figure out where Cyprus is because there's a few Cypruses. Nicosia.
Yeah, I don't know.
Nicosia, Cyprus. Can you look that up for me while I...
Yeah, because I'm not doing anything else.
Google it.
Can you Google that?
It's the last hour of our last show on Friday. So,
I
know.
Was just saying, I was like, do you know something?
Someone
I don't know?
Google that and let me know.
Producer
where it is.
Lowe's about but, to
Because I'm
on
impressed
it.
That they would do this. In Cyprus, same-sex marriage isn't legal. That's why I was surprised. But couples can enter into civil unions, which grant them all the same rights and privileges as married couples, except for adopting children. So we want to give a big congratulations.
In an early as queen to that. I love that.
Cyprus. Oh, this doesn't make any sense. This just says a bunch of things and is a map. I'm not good at maps, okay?
All right, let's move on to our weekly, I feel like every Friday we do this slate advice column. We pick an advice column, and this one's super interesting, right?
Yes. Oh, this headline just made us want to learn more.
Mm-hmm.
It started with this. I'm cheating on my husband, but it's making me a better wife.
Are you kidding me?
What does that even mean? Well, we're getting into that story after this.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, the new Channel Q.
Now we're moving into the advice column archives. This one is an interesting one.
I mean, yeah.
This wife wants to know if her cheating on her husband makes her a better wife. Because she seems to think so. In the letter, she writes, I love my husband. We've been together for 14 years. The issue is before we were together, I had an avid sex life. He has never really cared about sex. We haven't had any in 5 years.
Yikes.
He has a bad back and no sex drive.
Girl, if he don't lay down and you do the work.
I've tried talking to him. We've tried therapy. No changes. Last year, I started sleeping with someone else. It's amazing. Husband has no clue. My issue is that I don't feel guilty. I don't want to leave my husband, but I refuse to live without sex. Am I a bad person? Well, I mean, we have an expert joining us. Do you
so wait,
any...
did she say it's made her better? Did she say any of that? Like,
no, she goes, I sleep with this guy about once a week, and to be honest, I'm much happier now and a better wife because I no longer am resentful.
Okay. So yeah, let's get our therapist on here.
Okay. Amanda Pachuitko is with us right now. A licensed marriage.
Hello.
Hi. Thanks for being here. You are a licensed marriage and family therapist. So what is your take on this situation?
I think that my take on the situation would be that although it might make her feel better because she's finally getting her needs met, there's a systemic problem that we kind of get stuck when we have secrets, because the secret ends up taking often our attention and our focus away from other things.
I honestly think it makes her an even more terrible person, because I think she has a lot of things that she has to clearly work through, because if she feels like she's kind of manipulated her own thought process of trying to say, oh, I'm actually doing a good thing here because it's helping our relationship. Yeah. It's just like, whoa, red flag, right?
I agree. It kind of seems like making a decision and taking his ability to consent away from him because he doesn't get a choice.
Yeah, and I'll be honest, like, I haven't been married, but I've been in relationships where I built up resentment instead of having the balls to end the relationship or communicate and try to make it work. I would rebel, right? And I would use that as an excuse, saying, well, I'm not getting my needs met, so it rationalizes it. And that's a really messed up way of thinking, which is, I've changed since, gone to therapy. But yeah, how do you deal with clients who express their desire, or like kind of rationalize their desires in this way, or indulgences?
I think that it's pretty common that people, by the time they get to me, rationalize many of these things, and a lot of the work that we do is kind of uncovering, discovering what is the need, what's going on, how can we get the needs met for everyone here, because it's not just about her need. When she got into this monogamous relationship, she clearly wanted it at some point, so let's kind of find, what is she desiring? Is she looking for the fun and the risk of this other partner? Is she polyamorous? Is she not masturbating enough? Not having enough pleasure? What is it? Maybe she's scared of her husband's response to a fantasy. There are so many questions.
Well, it does seem like, you know, the partner does have a part to play into this, and it obviously sucks that he's being cheated on, but she says she hadn't had sex in 5 years.
That's a long time. I mean,
what is going on?
Right, absolutely. And my question would be, have they talked about it? They saw a therapist. Did they see a sex therapist? So I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist. After that, I got special certification in sex therapy, because there's a whole new realm of what you're going to do to get sexual needs met that are sometimes different than just relationship needs.
Yeah, but I do feel like there's something to be said about someone who wants that escape and that can't, you know, be honest with the people around them. And that goes back to, there is something that they're not healing there.
It could be healing, and then it kind of starts this pattern of, like, it feels really fun, and then the dopamine gets in our body, and then we're like, ooh, I really like this. Maybe we get some of this PEA or phenylthylamine hormone, which is like that new relationship energy stuff of falling in love. It's kind of exciting. So I think that people also use the physical body to justify the emotion.
Oh, yeah. So how do you get through that? I mean, if someone's feeling like they're dealing with this and it's something they fall back on all the time, what's your advice?
My advice is that pleasure is very healing. And I often ask, what is your relationship like with your orgasm alone? What is your relationship like with your body alone? Forget your husband for the moment. Forget your partner. What is your relationship like with you, and how intimate are you with you? Because it's important to have time for yourself to experience what pleasure is to you. Mm-hmm. Versus having to go out and find it with someone else.
That's true.
Having a fantasy with someone else is much different than using your imagination to get intimate with you.
Hey, work on yourself. That's what I'm saying. Self-love in all the ways. Amanda Pachuco, thank you so much for being here with us again. Where can people find
you? Absolutely. They can find me at lifecoachingandtherapy.com.
Okay, that's easy. Well,
that's
have a great URL. Yeah, have a great weekend. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much. Have a great weekend.
Our Yaz Queen of the Day is coming up next, and this one is a very big name, part of the squad in Congress. She's, you know, breaking barriers in so many ways now with a story she just shared online. That's next.
Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan, the new Channel Q.
It is time for our Yas Queen of the Day.
Yes, queen.
All right. This one goes to Representative Ayanna Pressley, one of the squad members. Now, she's been known for her beautiful hair. And recently, we've been seeing her out there experimenting with different hairstyles, textures, getting a weave, and even cutting her own hair. And she's had, you know, wigs recently. So this has helped a lot of even other young Black girls. She's become a hero for them. Now she's coming out to talk about something that is, you know, has been a crazy experience for her and would otherwise be very traumatizing. But she thinks it's important to share that she has been wearing wigs recently because she has alopecia.
So here alopecia.
Alopecia.
Yeah.
Now here she is explaining what happened.
My official public revealing. I'm ready now because I want to be freed from the secret and the shame that secret carries with it. And because I'm not here just to occupy space, I'm here to create it. And I want to be free. I am making peace with having alopecia. I have not arrived there. I'm very early in my alopecia journey, but I'm making progress every day. And that's why I'm doing this today. It's about self-agency. It's about power. It's about acceptance.
And might I add, she, one, is a beautiful bald woman. Mm-hmm. I mean, watching that video, you have to check out the video on our Instagram at LGT Show. It's one of those things where I looked at her and I'm like, wow, this is such a beautiful thing for her to come out and speak out against.
Oh, yeah.
Well, not speak out against, but speak about her own personal situation and imagine the doors that's going to open up for so many other people that are dealing with this and accepting themselves. I mean, absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah, it's an autoimmune disorder and it makes the body attack its own healthy hair follicles. She talks about how her last hair fell out during a really crazy time. It was the night before Donald Trump's impeachment vote in the House of Representatives, and it was the anniversary of her mother's death.
Wow.
As well as she was mourning her mentor, Chairman Elijah Cummings. So a lot there, but it's amazing that she came out to share her story. So we give her our Yas Queen of the Day.
Yeah. Queen.
Okay, don't go anywhere. We'll be back with more right after this.
Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan, the new Channel Q.
Well, that does it for today's show. Wow. Friday. Fri-yay.
I mean, it is time to go. It is Friday, honey. I am honestly ready for the weekend. You know, we got to celebrate our sister station at Amp Radio. Yessie Ortiz, she's always, she's on the afternoon show the same time as us. So if you're not listening to us, you're probably listening to her, which is deserved. But happy birthday to you, Yessie. We love you.
And shout out to Coldplay, who happens to be in the building right now.
Okay, so here's some tea. Literally, Chris Martin is in two studios right by us.
We're right
singing his heart out. He's warming up those vocal cords.
I could smell him in the halls.
Oh, I thought that was like Chinese food.
No, I smell man.
Ooh,
okay, yummy. Well, we'll be back on Monday. How to stay informed on what's happening in the world without feeling hopeless. We're going there. Plus, we're going to be sharing a story about states who want to stop transgender high school students from playing sports. That's on Monday's show. Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan, 4 to 7 p.m. Pacific, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern, right here on Channel Q. Remember, listen to our show as a podcast on our site. We are channelq.com, and where our podcasts are available. Sending you love and light. Have a great weekend.
Honey, we're slay. All right, bye.